Hey, what's up, guys? This is Lucas Burnley. You are listening to the Edge and Flow podcast. I'm here with my co-host, TJ Schwartz. How's it going, TJ?
Real well. Just had
We're
some.
two in a row, man.
Yeah, two in a row, dude.
Feels good.
Can we put together a hat trick?
I know,
We can
man. We
get three in a
went.
row, man. We're rolling.
And I think we are doing three in a row.
I think so.
We can leave it hanging, but we got a guest for next week.
Yeah, we do.
Pretty
We'll
exciting.
announce at the end of the episode because
Yeah.
it's an interesting one. It's not like the one you would guess, I bet.
I gotta admit that that is true. I'm super excited. Definitely someone who is like in my timeline of the industry. It's pretty fun. But yeah, man, we were talking about this a minute ago, which is basically like we're still kind of in this like shop update, like shift. You know, every time we talk, that's kind of what we're chewing on. So we're just gonna kind of roll with that for this episode too. And then yeah, I think we're gonna get into the weeds on a few things. Where should we start, man?
Well, that's a good question. How about you lead? Because
Okay.
we're talking about burnout. It's like the big scary word.
Yeah, okay. So we recorded last week. I had done PNWCI the week prior, and the Thursday before the show, Maddie and the boys went on vacation. Okay. So I got back from the show. We had employees in the shop for a couple of days, and then basically I was helping them get ready, dropped them off at the airport, man, and like the floor kind of dropped out. And I wasn't expecting it. I thought I did really well with show prep. I was a little bit ahead. I got everything that I wanted done, finished, but I was working 100-hour weeks, like easy towards the end, like maybe the last 2 weeks. And this is kids are home from school. We're dealing with other things. I'm also trying to like keep employees like on track and like with jobs in the shop, but I'm like hyper focused on my own work. Man, it actually caught me off guard this time. It was pretty shocking. What was nice, I guess, about this time is that because my family was out of town, I didn't have any obligations of like time around the kids, and it happened on a weekend, so we don't have employees in. But I almost made it worse because, like, dude, I didn't leave the house for, I think the first 2 days. It just shut down, man. Like, I fell asleep one day. Like, I ate one meal the first day. It was a trip.
Come down. So do you feel like that rhythm is something that you is that like a callback from your past? Is that the way you used to work?
Yeah, and this, like, we've talked about this on here a little bit, which is really what I think is happening is it's an adrenal dump. Okay. So if you've ever been in a fist fight, it's post fight. Because your body, like getting into show prep, like your body or any stressful situation like this, your body just like ramps up capacity. Dude, I felt great. Like I was working 19-hour days, I think like the last 4 days, probably something like that.
Crazy.
I didn't notice it. Like because you have the adrenaline of like a deadline and the creative spark. And like it's just going, right? But your body is physically getting worn down. And then there's so much like decision making and kind of like cognitive load that a reset is kind of bound to happen. So what I would say is earlier in my career, these moments were less critical. Had my family been around and this happened, it would have sucked because I would have checked out. Right. And pretty much the only way for me that I've found through it is kind of like to, it's like a forced stop. And I hate it because you're also running so hard that like, I feel like I need to be busy.
Yeah.
So I'm like, first day, I'm like, okay, I'm going to like do this. I'm going to take the day off, but I'm going to do these house projects. And then I'm just like not functioning well.
Yeah.
So I finally was just kind of like went with the flow and I'm like, all right, I'm just gonna try to rest. I'm not gonna like judge around, like I'm gonna watch a movie, I'm gonna sleep. You know, Maddie booked me at like a sauna and a cold plunge the following day.
Wow.
And it just like little things, but dude, it took, I think I called you yesterday. I was like, dude, I like finally feel human. It was like 5 days of just really running at like 10%.
Which I think is totally reasonable. You know what I mean? That's, I know in the moment, maybe it feels weird. Cause it's like, I don't know if you were feeling guilt or whatever with like just unplugging, but I mean,
totally,
you have to, you know, it's part of,
well, and it's crazy. This is like a weird, I don't know, like if it's just like a weird self-employed thing or like a maker thing or what, but yeah, I mean, there's a lot of time where I'm working 6 days a week and I work, dude, like I work long hours.
Mm-hmm.
What the hell?
Yeah. So
if I can't take a break.
Yeah. So do you feel like with the way you view your work or the way you think about your work and the way your motivation flows, do you think it's better for you to go the like binary where it's like sprint, stop, sprint, stop, sprint, stop? Is that like part of the rhythm of the way your mind works, would you say?
Well, you know, I think over this last year, what's been interesting is that I've said a few times, like, let the efficient things be efficient, right? Mm-hmm. I think what I'm seeing is there's multiple paths, but I like day to day. I really am enjoying the consistency of like the Kihoku process and like scheduled drops and even like monthly SciPop drops and stuff. Cause I kind of know what's coming. I know the work that it takes to get it done. And that's consistent.
Mm-hmm.
The creative side of me, like that is like old script, like, you know, feeding my, like the custom maker definitely thrives off of a little bit of creative chaos and a deadline. Mm-hmm. What we've been trying to figure out is like how to almost can that. Mm-hmm. Right. So a big one is there's no reason that I should really be pushing as hard right before a show as I am, but I need to push hard at some point because that's when like the open bid knives happen. And that's when I come up with a new finish and I do enjoy it, but the cost now, the downstream costs are higher.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing that I'm trying to essentially mitigate where it's, if I have a scheduled break, if I know like, okay, like post show, I'm taking 5 days scheduled time off. And in those days, I'm going to like do these kind of like self-care, like ritualistic almost things. So that's one thing that I did this time was, dude, I used ChatGPT to like basically map it where I was just kind of like, I would put in, I'm like, okay, here's what happened. Like, here's the hours I was working. Here's the show. Here's how I'm feeling. And it was really nice because it basically starts to break down like, hey, this is super common with this type of like event and with creatives.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what's happening. Like your nervous system is shot right now. Mm-hmm. You are in a state of fight or flight. You want to be busy. You want to keep working. But when you do that, you're basically it's resetting that feeling.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And you can't break out of it. And it was just, it was really, really helpful. So it started to kind of offer like, hey, I can offer like a post show wind down plan, or here's things that maybe you can focus on. And this is stuff like, dude, I read a ton. I read like, I've always read self-help books. I read like performance books and, you know, a lot of it is not, it's not like new, mm-hmm. but it is situational. And so that was helpful. And then the other thing that I did was almost kind of journal it to where I would just type like, hey, okay, I worked Today I had employees in the shop. We worked a 10-hour day, started out really strong. I noticed that like conversations were like tanking me. Mm-hmm. Right. Because it would almost like fire up like a creative spark.
Yeah.
And I'd get excited. And then I'd be like, oh man, that like, now I'm super distracted. It's taking me a long time to get back on track. And it just, I was able to like kind of categorize and organize things. My hope is that with some of this stuff, I can get to a point where I almost have like a little bit of a roadmap, which you would think after 20 years of doing this, I would have like internalized.
Yeah.
But it doesn't, I guess it doesn't always work like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And the human brain is so interesting, man. It's, I'm listening closely because I think we have a similar, but an almost opposite situation. And so I have a similar feeling that you do, that like there has to be a way of, because it's like there's the rhythm and the loop that you just described, that honestly, that's just the way the human brain works. And what you do to rebound and not get stuck on one aspect of that loop is important. And knowing when you're in different parts of that arc or that waveform,
the self-awareness, you know what I mean? Is huge.
Self-awareness is massive. That's everything, actually, I think.
Well, and that's a performance thing right there. Like understanding what the machine is doing, when you're overloading it, when you have additional capacity across a long timeline, like to me is really important. And this, dude, I mean, we're in the knife industry. This is not like, it is not something that is like really talked about. Like, you know, people aren't like talking about burnout. We're a work culture, you know, and like, it's a pretty like rah, rah, like just do the work. But I just see it as like, I know that I function better and I'm asking a lot of myself, like I'm asking myself to be productive, but also creative, but also problem solving across like a long period of time, and asking to be a good parent and a good husband. You know what I mean? It's like, there's a lot going on there.
Yeah. It's a big schedule, man. That's a lot of work. I don't work like that.
And I don't want to. Right. Like right now, I think it's that there's multiple things that are inefficient, you know, and the way that you're working right now, I think is, well, one, it's a testament to the process. Okay. That it is allowing you to kind of streamline areas and be like, this is how much time I want to devote to work, and the work is not all consuming. Right. But it's also, I do think a lot of that for me is the like really creative custom side.
Yeah. Well, and the reason that I think this could be an interesting conversation is you're in this situation where you have this hyper consuming work that you enjoy in the moment, and it becomes a sprint, and it becomes, you know, just like kid in a candy store kind of feeling. And then there's the come down. For me, over the last, I don't know, number of months or year, maybe I've felt maybe it's almost the opposite problem, where it's like, I don't feel consumed enough by the work. You know what I mean? It's like it's like the triggers aren't there. So it's not a feeling of burnout, because it doesn't feel like you're being overworked. It's a feeling of disengagement. It's like disassociative feeling. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where it's like, there's not enough points of interest happening to like stay engaged. So it's really the opposite, but maybe a similar result, which is you end up kind of just disengaging, you know, either.
Well, it's a lack of forward. It's like a lack of forward momentum.
Yeah.
Right. And this is where I think the balance thing happens, which is if I know that like to do a show means that I'm going to lose a week of productive work, that cost gets added into the benefit of doing a show. Right. And like early on, there were times when I would like no kids, like, you know, early 20s, probably, where I would do Blade Show. Like, I remember one time I came back, I don't think I worked for a month.
Wow. Yeah.
Different need base, but also just like you know, you go like, I made enough money to like be able to take time off. But when I look back on it, I'm like, yeah, I probably just pushed super hard and I was drained and mm-hmm. didn't have like the coping mechanisms or the, like, I guess like the obligation to figure it out quickly. Whereas mm-hmm. now, man, like I don't have the obligation because someone else is going to suffer other than me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I just think that that's where, like, for you, you're probably right. You're in a system where it's like things are pretty streamlined. So you almost need to shake it up or learn something or go into development mode, but you need to like force that because it's not happening automatically. If a machine went down, you would be in it because you'd have to be problem solving.
Well, in a sense, I would almost say that like, it feels like my biggest value to the work that I've been doing for the last year is fixing broken things. That's basically all I think about and do, is because it's not huge things, but it's like, why is this tool making a hole size that's different than it has for the last 3 years? Right. I don't know. Let's look into it. While I'm doing that, why is our coolant not filtering fast enough? That's weird. We need to research some different coolant filtration. You know, like, it's that stuff where it's like, it's all reactive because it's all, I come into the shop and it's like, I don't really want to start anything because I know in 15 minutes there's going to be a little thing that needs kind of worked on. And so it's like, it's hard to plan to do something that is creative or new because it's like, you just know that you're going to just have to be prepared to just for maintenance level problem solving. You know what I mean? Which becomes mm-hmm. larger and larger the more production you're doing. And so for me, I think part of it is like, I kind of fell prey to that where it's like just living the life of maintenance level improvements. Or
how do you get out of that? Like, as you scale a business, dude, there's a level that is organic. Okay. Mm-hmm. If you are individual craftsperson, you make whatever it is that you're making at the scale that you can as a human. Okay. Mm-hmm. You then repair the machines inside of that system based on the wear and tear that you as one human are creating.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And this is where, what we were just talking about a minute ago, like I'm reading a Harvard Business School, like basically study of like manufacturing and capitalism, right? Mm-hmm. Like how manufacturing affected like the concept of capitalism. Super interesting. And it goes through Rolls Royce. It goes through like all of these, you know, Thyssen Steel in Germany, like all these different companies. And that is a common theme. Like mm-hmm. we're not in a, you know, you're not in an echo chamber. Like this mm-hmm. is something that businesses go through, but it's even seeing that, it's like, I don't know how to deal with it. It's like the same thing around like management of employees where you're like, okay, I make the thing. Okay, now I'm making multiple things. Now I need help to make the multiple things. Okay, now I need people. And then it's like, oh, now I need to repair the machines that the people work on.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is where it starts to really like shift.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like the river of just things to be fixed or attended to gets just more and more tributaries the more machines you put on the floor, people you hire or something, even if everything's working like really good, which I would say they are in our shop, but it's just, there's always something with each little system. And the more systems you have, that's a lot of little somethings. You know what I mean?
Well, so, and this is like, I think this is like middle passage stuff is what it feels like to me, where the reality is that there is some human that would love nothing more than to hang out in your shop and make sure machines are running.
And just fix things, find solutions, stabilize anomalies and stuff like
maybe they do other tasks also, but they have like a function as maintenance.
And I think what brought me around to kind of realizing this is Wilson is 3. And when I was in the garage, he probably doesn't remember it, even though it was only 18 months ago. He was, you know, not old enough probably to remember it. So mm-hmm. I actually, that occurred to me, and I was like, I've got the YouTube videos from back when I was in the garage. And for whatever reason, I was showing him a YouTube video that I had posted from the garage as a one man shop. And I was watching it with him, and it like struck me in a weird way of like, in this video, I remember like that whole, I had like 3 days where I was messing with Kydex and I did this big video. And I remember like I spent 3 days just improving Kydex and finding a way to do something interesting and new with it.
Yeah. Deep work.
And it like struck me really hard. That's like, that is what is missing, because solving the little problems that are always just coming up that are just little nagging things, that's not deep work. It could become deep work, but it's really not. You're just, you know, oh, that end mill seems to not be performing. I'll just go source a different one. I'll order three different ones and we'll test all three. Okay. Write some notes. Okay. Next thing. You know what I mean? It's whereas something new that you're just grabbing and you don't know where it leads and it's like conceptually intriguing. I just haven't done that in quite a while. And I've had this feeling of like a little bit of a haze for the last year where it's like, what am I exactly doing? Why do I not feel super engaged? And so I realized, I was like, I need to grab a hold of something that has unknown endpoints, that has a lot of creativity, that, you know, is speculative in a way.
Right. Has some risk to it.
Yeah. Like, has some risk that isn't just like maintenance. You know what I mean? So I've started picking up a project like that, and dude, instantly engagement. Like I could just feel this total difference. That is a major thing that was missing, which the reason I'm mentioning that, not to hijack what you were saying, is it's like a little bit the opposite of what you're talking about, where you live basically almost exclusively doing that. And so it's like that has the effect of burnout if you have an overload of like blue ocean sort of study, you know what I mean? Because it's like that's a muscle in your brain that also can be fatigued. And so meeting in the middle seems like it's always the theme of the podcast between you and I.
It really is. And I feel like this is an area where like the just-in-time manufacturing model kind of applies, where I've made my living doing that version, right? Like, to make more money, I have to literally start over, make the next piece, which I guess in a way we still do, but in a different way, right? Where it's like way more knife shows, everything kind of one-off and custom. And so I know that flow. I think where I'm at right now is knowing the value of that to me, but also almost like wanting to put a cap on how much time I allow for it. But in that, it's like a freedom through structure concept, because I feel like if I do actually kind of almost restrict it, I can improve the quality of that time, like that deep work, like find the areas where I'm like, oh, I just want 2 weeks to fully deep dive, like orange vest activities. Don't talk to me. I'm just working on this. You guys are lined out. And I feel like if I do that, there's probably some kind of cadence that fills the cup. And because this is with businesses like ours, like a lot of times those are the moments that are actually creating downstream success. Right. And I think that this is an area where your like either personality type or work style, you know, over a long run kind of defines what your business is. I'm riding a weird middle line right now, because I think I do default to the more kind of like, you know, creative artist side of it, but I'm really trying to understand like a more consistent manufacturing side. I think that the almost the opposite is true for you, which I do think your brain is aligned to manufacturing, but I know how creative you are, like even from like the art side, like I know where that is. And it's like it's easy to I think you almost defaulted to the side where it's like consistent revenue, not having to do like crazy artist sprints, which but you also, you have that little side burning where you're like, you need it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's harder to get because you created an efficient system.
Yeah.
That needs you right now. Yeah. Once it doesn't, once you're out, like, oh, like, okay. I think that that has to just be like weird. I don't really use the term like founder, but like, I would imagine that is like foundry stuff where what is your ideal interaction with the company in a perfect world?
Yeah.
Like, what do you do?
Yeah. 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 And I think, I mean, it's solving the little problems is indispensable. Like the company can't even operate without that.
Right.
But I think the barrier for me was there's, when I start something new, there's a sense that I'm leaving work unfinished because there's this guilt associated with the fact that like, we're still having problems consistently with the stuff we do currently. So it feels there's a guilt associated with doing something new because it's like the job's not done kind of feeling. And that tendency to, it's like, well, we need to have this complete where those consistent small issues are not happening. And then I can be guilt-free and going on to the next thing. But that's a trap because if you have three machines, multiple employees, a supply chain that has, you know, 100 different vendors,
yeah,
like we do, then you, if you're waiting for the day where you're not, where you feel like what you have already is complete.
No, it doesn't
that's
happen.
That's all you'll ever do. And
well,
that's,
and the
what
fact
I'm,
that guilt, guilt is coming into this is what's nuts to me. Right? Like, why is that even part of the conversation? Like, what do you have to be guilty of?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, if stuff is so weird, man.
Yeah. It is interesting.
Like,
so yeah, I'm liking this conversation because this is a revelation that I've recently had. And I got to say, going to Seaside really opened me up because it's like, I'm back at a knife show. Knife shows tend to do that to me. They tend to engage me. They tend to stir something. And then just having, we were on the coast for 5 days, coming back, I felt way better in the shop and just immediately started thinking about new projects. And around that time, watched that video and was like, just connected dots that were missing. Cause I'd been kind of grasping for the last year at like, cause my thought was, well, this is what I need to do at work is solve all these little problems. That's what I do. So I need to have something that's a creative thing outside of work. And I've mentioned that ad nauseum on the podcast. It doesn't do the same thing of what the work does for me. Cause it's like the creative potential when you're talking about a new project that is part of my business is so much more powerful and captivating than like a hobby project is, because there's not like, the ceiling is so low on the hobby thing. It's like, yeah, you can have it. It's good to have. I'm not like discounting it, but it doesn't have the like effect that you're describing where it's like, you wouldn't take a hobby and go work 19 hours a day for 5 days straight. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. And let, I mean, like I could see there's a level where people do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. But I just think it's like, dude, it's almost hunter mindset where it's like, you can go for a hike or you can go hunting. Yeah. Right. In, I think with hobbies for a lot of makers, it is, we're accustomed to like having a tangible outcome that provides value.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's like positive or negative. I just think it's the way that our brains are wired. Mm-hmm. And at a point you're like, well, yeah, I want this potential, right? Like this potential positive outcome, not because I'm not just looking like my hobbies are not just full for the most part, full separation. Sure. Surfing, full shutdown, has nothing to do with work. I love it. I would do it way more if I could. I mean, there's things in there, but even like, dude, like going shooting or something like that somehow ties to work for me.
Yeah.
Cause
yeah,
it's
yeah.
like mechanical and like, a lot of things have some tie in.
Yeah, exactly.
Dude, even surfing does. It's surfing in my brain. I'm like, we always look at ourselves as like little components of the business, right? Like as like a streetwear brand or as a lifestyle brand. Surfing for me is that. in a way, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
everything is, that's, I think that everything is kind of related in that way, hobby wise.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, totally. Yeah. I feel similarly. I think, cause the big thing for me is working on like cars and stuff.
Yeah.
Which is, I really enjoy that. I think that's good. That's good for me, but there's something different, and we all know this as creatives, is that when you deliver a result to, like, and it's not performative, but like when you deliver a result to the public where it's like, no, I've produced something for people to enjoy. Like I'm providing value for other people. Like there's just the captivation that comes from that is totally different than something you're doing in your garage that's just for you. It's not that that's bad. It's that, you know what I'm saying? That if you're not scratching the itch of like being involved with people en masse, you know what I mean? Like there's the community side of running a business, which is like, I have customers that I talk to on a regular basis.
Yeah.
You know,
you get feedback, you get positive reinforcement.
Yeah.
Like
putting yourself out there creatively with them. There's something new, like legitimately new. It's like, there's tantalizing effects there.
There's also, I think, something that we probably deal with. And this for me in this cycle kind of came around, which is, okay, why am I feeling guilty sitting here? Because I feel like a lot of my value comes from producing.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like, that's like a tricky one.
Mm-hmm.
Because on one hand, it's like obvious, but then it's like, well, yeah, but you're also just like a human and like you're people's friend and you're a dad. And there's all these other things that are like viable. So yeah, like this idea that if you're not busy, you're not moving, you're not doing a project, you're somehow like not creating value. And I realized with this one, I'm like, okay, my family's gone for 2 weeks. Like the most value that I can create for them actually is to just be in a place where I'm like happy and rested and in a good mood.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like I don't need to work harder for them right now.
Yeah, what they want from you is you.
Totally. And that's like, that I feel like, I don't know if that is like a male trait, right? You and I have talked about this where I've said like, my goal is to like, not be so successful that I'm divorced. And that to like, and like people get divorced for all kinds of reasons. That is not like any commentary on divorce. It's the realization of like, that's like, I don't want to disappear. I don't want to, you know, like my primary focus in life to like be the business. That's not why I'm working.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's easy to fall into that loop.
Mm-hmm. It is. Yeah. And then ultimately the business is there for your family as much as it is for you, not the other way around, you know?
Well, and that's the ideal, right? Like I think, having kids put that into perspective where you're like, oh man, like I do work because I love what I do. And I'm like obsessive about it a little bit. And now I have someone else where I can't just like work can't be open-ended. And I think that's a struggle for a lot of us, right? Like the desire to actually want to be doing what you're doing and almost feeling like you have to make time for family.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to like flip that where it's like, no. Like I shouldn't even be having that thought.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like I don't, and I feel good. Like on the dad side, like I feel good. Like it's very rare that I miss something.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that's like I'm not missing like a play or some event.
Yeah.
Missing this vacation was like, kind of, there was some duality there. On one hand, I'm super bummed that I'm not with them, but I'm really happy that we were able to make it happen. Right. And I think that if I was there, I would have been trashed, which would have affected like the amount of fun and like relaxation and everything that they are having just hanging out with family, who's not burnt out and run down and worried about what's going on at home in the business.
Yeah. Well, and there's nothing wrong with resets. You know what I mean? Like, nope. There's a, even if you could have gone, you could make the case that you not going has its advantages. You know what
totally.
I mean?
Just, well, that's a divide and conquer thing too. Like that's mm-hmm. good. I think that's like good partnership.
Definitely.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, yeah.
And another part of this is in this, after that trip and after sort of having some of these realizations, I deleted Instagram and Facebook.
Dude, okay, we got to get into this. And Facebook?
Yeah, not the accounts, but the apps. They're gone.
Oh, dude.
I don't have access to them anymore.
All right. This is great. Instagram first.
Mm-hmm.
You were like, give me like the leading up to that decision.
So Instagram, I've really been frustrated with for the last 6 or 7 years. It's been a slow decline, like a tailspin, if you ask me, in terms of its value and what mm-hmm. it is to me. There was a time where I thought it was like the way to start a career in knives. And I think it was, cause it was the quasi forum world
circa when,
2013 to like 20, maybe so even like 2020, almost like that decade.
Early days
basically.
Up. Okay.
Yeah. What I mean, for me, it was everything. It built so much for me. It was able to give me exposure where I would not have been able to. And I don't know if that's can be done anymore on there. Part of it is I found that, I mean, obviously there's the banning going on. It's like, if I post a picture of a knife, it gets flagged. Count right. can't be shown to non-followers. It reduces your reach even inside your own followers. So it's like, okay, well, I'm not going to post pictures of knives. So there's the mental battle of like, how do I work the algorithm?
Right.
And to me, part of it was like, I just kind of surrendered because I was already annoyed enough. And I kind of just stopped posting really anything. And then I was like, you know what? I'm just going to post knives. And I don't, if they're not going to show it to my non-followers, whatever, I'm not going to play that game. Posted knives. And because the part of it is I do that weekly drop with the unique configurations, right? And I was posting knives on there and sending out, you know, an email list. Mm-hmm. And that was how I'd, you know, reach people about these drops. And 1 week I went to post on Instagram some new knives we were dropping. And it was just the Instagram app was just so buggy that I couldn't post the video, the reel without it. I would take a perfect video, and when I would post it, the saturation would go to 100%, but not till after it was posted. Mm-hmm. So as you look at it on the feed and the saturation was 100%. So it looks orange and blue, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I had to delete it, did it again. I was like, okay, this week I'm just not going to post the drop on Instagram. I was like, I just don't have time to figure out why it's glitching. And I didn't notice a measurable difference on the drop. The fact that the Instagram post wasn't made, I could not perceive that there was a difference. Maybe there was. Maybe there's a couple people that didn't circle in on that drop. But it occurred to me, I'm like, the value for this thing is spiraling for me. And
right. And the cost.
And the time cost. And also, it's the most addictive thing outside of any substance. It's just about the most addictive thing mm-hmm. ever made. You know what I mean? And so I found that like the majority of my time on there is like, look at some knives, sidetrack, tangent. Holy cow. Doom scrolling. You know what? Just like,
yeah, 20 minutes is gone, or
just the way they built it. You know what I mean? It's yeah. exactly the way it was designed to do that. And so I'm like, I just realized that if I quit using it for like 2 weeks completely. I would go on there and look at reels mm-hmm. because of the addiction factor, but I wouldn't post or engage.
Are reels the thing that you're watching?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And are you doing like, what is it? Like the discover, like, are you just kind of like scrolling yeah.
well,
through
the,
and like
the way it's engineered is if you see your friend's reel, you yeah. watch it inherently, you're just going to swipe instantly. Yeah. You're in explore. So it's yeah. like the goal is to just trap you.
Right.
And so I was like, you know what? I haven't posted anything of value and I haven't noticed any difference in business. I'm just going to delete the app and I'm not going to look at reels anymore and I'm done. So I just, and Facebook is the same way, because it's got the same reels. They just cross platform it, right? So you can't just delete one, or you'll just, if you're worried about being addicted or worried about right. getting stuck on it, there's no right. difference. And so I deleted the Facebook app. The only thing on Facebook remaining that I do involve myself in is our user group.
That's what I was going to ask. That was my only thought.
I just do it on desktop because I found on desktop the way that the engineering is, it's less likely you're going to sit there and scroll on desktop, at least for me. It's easier to just go in, open my laptop, approve members, chat a little bit, answer questions, shut the laptop. It doesn't catch me.
Actually goes back to forum days, which is forums weren't sticky the way that, you know, Instagram or TikTok is sticky.
Yeah. So yeah, I don't think I'm going back, dude. I don't think I'll ever. It's dead to me. That's how I feel about anything that has that addictive property that also has mass censorship. That's empirically against me. It's empirically against me, and it's addictive. It's like, it's trash. I'm not saying that other people should follow suit. I'm just saying in my view, it's worthless to me. It's the opposite of worthless.
I think it's part of a bigger conversation too, which I think this is kind of happening. So I just had another friend fully leave Instagram. And his was kind of a different reason, but he got to a point where he's like, I'm just tired of fighting with them. Yeah. And he's a delightful human and he's a screen printer. There's no reason why he should be having a problem.
When you told me that, I was blown away.
Right?
That they had issues. They're not a company.
Fully. No, it's a screen printing company. Yeah. And just to give him a shout out, it's Days Printing. He's on TikTok still, but basically his account was shut down on Instagram. He couldn't do anything. He didn't have a verified account. He had a pretty big following. Post really great content.
Excellent.
Consistently. Yeah. He was the impetus for us, like increasing like the content that we were doing, you know, like fun stuff and like engaging. And he's like, dude, it's just gone. My account's gone. Mm-hmm. And he's like, we tried to reach out. We got no response. He's like, I'm done. He's like, I'm just, he's like, we do better with TikTok. Mm-hmm. He's like, I'm out. So man, they're making it hard. We've gone through a ton of issues with being, you know, like shadow ban stuff or having our account restricted. And I kind of like dug in my heels and was just like, okay, I want to figure this out. I want to do it. But we're kind of in the same boat where it's like, I do realize that I probably put an outsized amount of time and effort into something that I do think the value is starting to like fade.
And I just don't, I've been waiting for that moment where they sort of discover this issue that they have with this censorship problem, because I don't think they're actually trying to do this. I think it's a byproduct.
Yeah.
And so I kind of like held out because there was like this nostalgia for the glory days of Instagram with the chronological feed. And there's this just waiting for something to change. And I just got to the point where I'm like, it's an app. Why do I care at all? You know what I mean? It's not an integral part of me. It's like, if I delete it, what's going to happen? Nothing. No change.
There's like another positive side to this too, which is I remember when I left so I was like USN Forum, Usual Suspects Network, was like, I owe it so much, I think, for early days of my career and just like making friends, meeting customers, the USN show. Like, I think I did the first 10 of them in a row, like, but it got to a point where the forum had changed enough. And like the way that we were interacting, like they had a really clunky mobile system and it was right around when Instagram was coming on, and I maintained my forum for like a couple years. And I just noticed this feeling of, man, I'm not like going in there and it's not where I like, it's not, I'm not feeling the way that I did over the long time. And I kept it for multiple years after that. And I remember when I was finally like, okay, I'm going to let it go. And there was a little bit of a freedom there, because with any of these platforms, like, they are tied to some level of our success.
Yeah.
And to be able to leave them is to acknowledge that you can do it without them. So they may mm-hmm. have served their purpose, or you are at a point where you're not like dependent on them. And so I think that's really good. Like, I'm still scared to leave Instagram. Like, I would feel like, I don't know. That feels like maybe not the best like business decision for me. So the fact that you can actually leave it, I think, is a testament to like how you feel your brand is currently positioned.
Yeah. Well, and part of it is like, we're not getting new followers on Instagram because our account is locked. It's hidden from non-followers. It just is. There's nothing I can do about it.
This makes no sense.
So if I can't get new followers, I spent the last year migrating as many people from the follower account over there as I could to my email list.
Yeah.
Because it's now a zero sum game. There's not a growth potential on the platform anymore.
Right.
So all that's left to do is just migrate as much as possible. It's just like salvage job. And I got to where I was like, I can keep saying on Instagram stories and reels that it's like, please join our mailing list. Please. I can only do that for so long before it's like, there's a point of diminishing returns. Am I going to spend another 2 years trying to get more followers to
just chase it? Yeah.
And it's like, I feel like I put a year in of doing that and I salvaged what I could and then just cast it away. You know what I mean? So
the hardest part, you haven't had no new followers. In the last 30 days, we've added 1,100 followers.
That's awesome.
Okay. Our account's not restricted. Okay. Mm-hmm. We went through 6 months where it was restricted all the time and we didn't add followers. Yeah. I don't care if they want to make it so restrictive that we can't use it. Like, our industry can't use it. What bothers me is that I don't understand the rules.
Yeah. Yes.
Like, don't change the rules. Like, you and I should be having the same experience based on the content that we're posting and our engagement level or whatever, if we're paying like a pay tier, whatever it is. But the fact that your account is restricted, mine is not, that that bothers me.
Yeah.
So yeah, and that's a problem that like solving it is starting to feel like less interesting.
And I believe if I put my head to it, I could find a path with Instagram to do something more productive with it.
That's what we did,
but,
right?
Like, there is, I'm not saying there's no way to do it. They're completely blocking us out. It's just that I just felt that energy is better spent elsewhere because if the mechanics of their platform are just counter to what we do as a company, at least in part, like we're not welcome here. You know what I mean? Like we can find a way to on the margins be maybe allowed, but like, it doesn't feel like we're welcome here. And
it's not fun.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Also, like, I don't want to come to the party if you guys don't want me here.
Yeah, like, exactly. That's how I feel. Know? Yeah. Yeah. It's like, okay, you don't want me, then see ya.
You sent me a message too. You're like, dude, I haven't like looked at my phone.
Yeah.
This is great.
Yeah. Cause I deleted those apps. And for the first 3 days, it's like, there's that instinct to just pull it out.
You just want like, look,
cause those apps give you a notification every 15 minutes, even if nothing's happening, they're going to find a notification to give you.
Yeah.
They're going to say someone you're friends of friends with posted a reel, check it out. You know what I mean? Yeah. And so it's like, there's always that. And then, so I was still habitually checking and there was just no notifications on my phone for like 3 days. And I kept checking and then slowly just stopped.
Oh, dude, that's amazing.
Yeah. And so like, I would sit there and sit on the couch and like, look at my phone and like, just sit there and realize like, there's nothing on here anymore. You know what I mean?
Right.
And it would take me like 30 seconds of like kind of looking through my apps and be like, oh, I guess I'll just put it down.
something.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, and so, it's only been like 10 days, but now it's just whatever. You know what I mean?
It's a pretty big time. That's like where I started using that brick device where you basically like brick your phone and you can set it up with different. So the first thing I did was just pull all of the apps. Like, I shut it down and it shuts down Instagram and Facebook and a bunch of other kind of like doom scrolly apps, right? It's the same. It was the same thing where it's like, I would shut it down. And then for the first couple of days, like, I'm just in the habit of picking up my phone in like a 2 second window of boredom.
Yeah. It's like a subconscious movement that your body is
it's
doing.
Wild.
I don't like that. Yeah, that's, and I've said for like 2 years that if I didn't have a business, I would delete my social media
100%.
instantly. I've said that, and then that's where I started to, it started to occur to me, like, wait a minute, I keep saying that, but it's not providing a lot of business for me, so it's not really a true statement anymore, you know what I mean? So I just deleted it.
Yeah, that's, I've always used the like social media as like a level of success where I'm like, man, if you get to the point where you do not need social media as a small business owner, to me, that is like a very high level of success.
I mean, it is, it does feel pretty good. I will say though, a major thing that I would not walk away from is YouTube, because
universally true.
YouTube, I think, you know, Google has their issues, whatever, but they're just, they do not mind knives in the slightest. They have no issue with it. And they seem to actually support it. They're more than welcome to recommend knife videos. Like if you watch knife videos, your whole feed will be knife videos. No problem.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have the dopamine little cycle to it. It does have, they have like their little YouTube shorts, but clearly their main
not
product
as sticky.
Is 10-minute videos or more.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's their main product. And that's a way better product. That's a quality product, if you ask me. That's like real. That's value. That's like the reason the internet should exist. 11 seconds of like a little audio and something. It's entertaining. Like, I get it. I'm not like talking negative on it. It's just, you can
learn.
Well,
it's a personal response to a,
yeah,
to an option. Like, and this is, I mean, this is, like historically, like look at Prohibition or something like that, where you're like, well, liquor, I guess, is a problem because people abuse it. If you're a person who doesn't, you can be like, it doesn't bother me. Like, I just don't go in that store and I don't want it.
Yeah.
So it's really easy to be like, oh, like social media is bad. It's like, no, it's like, I don't deal with it incredibly well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? That's why I never, dude, we post a TikTok. I don't think I have ever looked around TikTok because I know myself too well. And everybody who talks about TikTok is like, oh, Instagram's bad, but like TikTok is crazy. It's like a vortex. I'm like, nope, no heroin. I'm good. Yeah. Like I know myself. I don't need to experience it.
Yep.
You know,
yep. That's
but it's also, there's like age related stuff and like timing. This is interesting though, too, because so around, I like, what's the term for it? Like, I like indicators. I'm always looking for indicators, right? So if we use indicators as like forums, right? Like the forums kind of fell off. And the crazy thing is that forums still exist and people still use them. They were probably at an age or like a tech usage stage where that just made sense. And they like kept using it. It's like spinners. Right? Like a spinner market like blew up and you have all these fidget spinners and then it dropped. But there are still makers doing custom fidget spinners and collectors buying them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's just the mass, like the steam has cooked off. So I wonder if right now this kind of shift of specifically around Instagram, where maybe Instagram is starting to feel like older, if that is the shift that's happening, that was like forums where kind of going to stay on it. Maybe you're not going to like move on to the next, like I'm a great example. I'm not really moving on to TikTok. If something comes out after TikTok, when something comes out after TikTok, I'm probably not moving to that also.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't feel like I've moved on from Instagram. I think they moved on from me. That's my sense, because there was a time when it was a chronological feed. It was just a better forum. It was just
for your brain and for us as creatives, because we could post content. We could post a picture of a thing that we made, have people who want to see that thing, see it and talk with other people making similar things. Awesome.
And if you saw something, you're like, I don't really enjoy this person's feed or this company's feed, unfollow, you'll never see it again. You know what I mean? There's
amazing.
And there's not, it's chronological. So you get to the top of the page, you refresh, no new posts. I'm done. Put it down. That was
Those days are gone.
That was the heyday. Cause it's like, I follow 25 makers. They're my 25 closest pals. They post cool knives. I would love to know what everyone's doing in my sphere, but Instagram is not that.
Dude, every once in a while, I will get a, I'll see a post from someone that I genuinely like and want to follow and was, or like content I was super interested in. And I'm like, I haven't seen this in 2 years.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it. Why? And then I go look at their account and I'm like, they've been posting that whole time.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, it is like, there's a brain rot thing to it where you're just like, I'm not going to then go and track and like go through my list of people that I follow to like keep on top of what they're doing. It's too much. Like it's too much work for the, what you're getting out of
it. Well, I think part of it is, so TikTok came out and they're not, they're a social media, but they're not in the, from the get go, they were engineered for just pure entertainment, not really to follow. Like, like what it, when Instagram came out, it was like a forum plus, it was like a, it was a social, a truly social.
It was network. Evolution of.
Whereas TikTok didn't come out and say, this is how you make friends and how you stay close to friends. This is how you just are entertained. That's pure entertainment.
Yeah.
Not social, you know, whereas, and the problem is Instagram copied them.
They copy everything.
That's where they ran awry because there like was a,
Threads is a copy, and Reels and
betrayed,
is a copy.
They betrayed what they had. If you, I don't know the numbers, they're probably 10 times bigger now because they did that. I'm not, I don't know, but they would just, they abandoned being a social media and just became an entertainment factor, you know what I mean? Which is not the same thing.
Yeah, this dude, I don't know. This is, I wonder what will be kind of like the next thing. Like I have to think it's AI related, you know? And I mean, AI is affecting the way that social media is working too. And like content, like I, now I just keep seeing things where I'm like, that's fake, you know? And like, I don't care about seeing that at all. Like, I wouldn't care if it was a real human. Now it's not a real human. That's just weird.
And increasingly so, like pages are, it's like, it's probably written by AI. It's probably engineered images by AI, probably posted by an automatic posting operation to where it's like, how much, what percentage of my feed is just rage bait or regurgitation or pattern recognition and recycling? You know what I mean? And it's just, I'm just done. I just,
maybe that's idea of like just like AI just talking to each other, you know, or if you have drone, if you have drones in warfare and drone against drone is different than like drone against human. There's a point where it's like, man, if you, you just post it, like I'm using my AI to post and that's going to, their AI is going to see it. Dude, this is where I just want to make stuff. You know, it's good that's to like, it's good to like reset and, like, again, this is this, this concept of splitting my shop is to see if I'm capable of having like an analog shop and an efficient manufacturing space. And I'm really curious, but for me, that's like almost like a blue sky project, right? Where I'm just like, I don't know.
I'm intrigued by the idea. Cause I could see where that would be valuable to me as well. So I'm excited.
But also it's also like, hard to conceptualize. Like we're, I'm basically the super mini is almost set up. We started like putting like toolboxes in the shop yesterday. Right now it's, again, it's that middle ground thing where we have tools in the main shop that I need to put in the CNC shop, but then we won't have them in the main shop, but I don't have the resources to purchase a complete second set. So I'm like trying to figure out like, wow, what do we actually move over? Right now, main goal is get Kihoku being fully produced inside of the other shop. Right. One, like, I think, so that means Kydex basically just able to do all the processes for the Kihoku over there. I need it. I need another tumbler, another bandsaw. I need, probably I can just move the Kydex press stuff over there. And then as soon as the first machine's running, I can move the second CNC. Then I can move all of like the tooling and little things that I don't want to just be splitting constantly and walking back across the street. Cause I forgot.
Yeah.
And that's where I think that where I'm going to see, Like,
yeah,
is will I work in both places?
Mm-hmm.
And does it provide a value?
Yeah,
it's the I'm ultimate, really excited, man.
The ultimate A/B test.
Kind of, man. Yeah. Like, but this is a great, this is another example of what we were talking about before, which is just like, I'm curious.
Mm-hmm.
So why not try it? And the business is successful enough to allow me that leeway to experiment.
Give it a rip.
And then
yeah,
get pissed because I'm losing so much time or something, you know?
Yeah. Well, I'm intrigued by that. The having the creative space and the efficient space. They don't mix. They don't mix. So
not the way that it is, like at the scale that we are now. They don't mix.
Yeah.
They just don't. Efficiency, and this is like efficiency is consuming.
Mm-hmm.
It consumes space. It consumes time. It provides a lot for that time, but it is like on a macro level, it's weird in my own shop. And this is like, I'm going to get heady with it for a minute, but like, I almost feel like my own shop is going through the Industrial Revolution, but mm-hmm. I'm on like both mm-hmm. sides of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm a Luddite, right? Who's like, I don't want the industrial loom to mm-hmm. take over, you know, my weaving.
Right.
And I'm bringing in the loom.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's nuts.
Yeah. There's something to be said for that though. I think it could be an awesome scenario because like you would have what I'm lacking, which is what I was covering earlier, which is like, I go to an efficient space to work. I don't, there's not really anywhere else to go where it's just like, I would love to have, I've even thought about just having another CNC machine that's like production not allowed here. It's just for messing with, you know.
Well, okay. 100% that you will do that. That has mm-hmm. to happen.
Yeah.
Right. That is, dude, taking it back to Silencer Co. Dude, founders pod, like prototype mm-hmm. division, like, that is a necessity.
Yes.
At some point you have your machine that like, dude, it can be whatever you want it to be. A few tools in a pod where it's just like, no, I just want to run this one thing.
The idea I came up with that I think is going to work great is when we need from here forward, if we're going to do new things, we need more machines.
Yeah.
We're not tapped on our current machines, but
right.
They're filling up. The spindle time is getting consumed quickly with our growth.
Yeah.
So it's like, if I see a new product on the horizon, that means new machine.
Right.
So my thought is when I conceptualize a new product, you then buy the machine while you're designing the product, the machine lands. I have that machine as my machine to make all the fixtures for that new thing, to prototype that new thing with no production interference. When I'm done, it's a production machine.
So I can't even tell you how much I love that.
The project is new machine, new product. I get to play. I get to do whatever. I get to make fixtures, no interference. Hand the keys off. Next product. Another machine. So maybe that it's not, you can't buy a new machine every 3 months, but you
bet.
yeah. But part of that is like, there's an engaging factor of a new machine too. Even if it's the same as your other machine, it's like, oh, a brand new machine, get to do some brand new parts,
dude.
This, and then take that and run with it. Once it's running, it's a production machine. There's no
dude,
reason.
Dude, you're speaking to my soul. You actually just like that. I mean, that's like dopamining at the highest level.
Yeah.
Because you're tying all of those things into novelty. Where you're like, oh, you get a new treat. Like, here's your new toy, and you're getting a new project that you get to work on. And then like, you're not even married to the machine because like once it served its purpose, you're like, cool, now you're just production. But that opens it up at some point for you to get the next machine. I've said so many times, I'm like, if I could just figure out how to just be constantly learning new machines, but not be dependent on them to like make revenue. That's probably my happiest. Right. Like we were looking at pantograph mills yesterday, which is ridiculous because we've got CNC but I like pantographs. Mm-hmm. And so I want a pantograph. I'm like, yeah, but I don't actually like, I don't really want to be dependent on it, but there's a few projects that I want to learn how to use it. Dude, if you can tie that, I had not thought about it in that way, which feels frustrating because I feel like my brain let me down on that. Right. Which is, I would have just been like, buy a really rad machine for yourself and keep it. You added in buy a rad machine and then use it just long enough to get another one.
Yeah. From that standpoint, it's almost disposable. From the creative side, it's like, it's almost like in the creative sphere, you're discarding it after you've developed the product and the process.
I really do think that serves a secondary purpose, which is it avoids stagnation.
Mm-hmm.
Because you would be looking for a current machine,
mm-hmm.
not a 10-year-old machine, or not making a project on the machines that you already know.
Mm-hmm.
And as you're working through new projects, you might be seeing like, oh, this would benefit from an additional process. You know, mm-hmm. like where I see you going would be like, you know, maybe at some point down the road, it's like, dude, maybe you are messing with 5-axis.
Mm-hmm.
5-axis out of the gate. Like you almost don't even just want to like put it into production. You would really have to learn it. But mm-hmm. that's the thing where I think over the long time horizon, that's how you stay connected. Yeah. Right. Or like it's the new type of laser.
Yeah.
Or it's the new, like, I think that has to be, and I obviously like, I swing way to the side with that. Cause I like buy machines that I don't actually have a use for just because I'm so excited,
mm-hmm.
you know? Yeah. I like your method.
Well,
there you go.
Yeah. So I really think I'm going to do that. I'm going to probably be shopping machines because the big thing with that is lead time. So it's like, if you're hot on a project, you got to get a machine ordered. You know what I mean?
Where
if
do that's you go? The way, what's the next one? Do you stay Sile?
It's a Sile, dude, for sure.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
You're in it.
It's just too good. I don't know. It's for this kind of thing where it's like, it's going to get used for R&D, then move to production. Just like, I just haven't found a reason not to. And I've found,
do they have anything new that is like, that would be interesting to you?
I mean, no, it'd be probably another one of the machines that we have. So right. It's not new in that way.
Not new in that way. Yeah.
But like,
or like buying a lathe or something like that, where it's like, you get to dig in and learn all the things.
And that could be kind of cool, but yeah, it'd just be another X7, to be frank. I mean, they're just so good.
So good.
Yeah.
Side note, Sile and Haas both make perfect knuckle tattoos.
Yeah.
There's four across.
Yep. That's great.
Okay. I don't have any new machine purchases coming up. I don't think so. It's pretty good. Dude, I feel like the natural close of this conversation coming on. Yeah. I feel like we went into it pretty hard.
I got to commend Steven. He rolled in 15 minutes ago and he's about to Cerakote, and I can hear him out there moving parts really quietly. I can hear like the little clank. So he's being awesome, showing. But we probably ought to let him get to sandblasting. So
yeah. Awesome, man. This conversation is definitely one that I would love feedback on from like people listening. And I know we got a lot of makers that listen. Like, how are you guys dealing with this? Do you experience burnout? Are you just tanks that like can work and endlessly? Are you really good at managing your schedules? Like, what do you guys got going on?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I'd love to hear.
You have a 9-to-5? Are you going through this stuff? Like, what's up? Oh, do we get to say who's on the pod next week?
Oh yeah, we almost forgot that. We really buried the lead here, but
yeah.
Next week we are hosting none other than Ernest Emerson for a little chat. Very excited for that.
Super excited.
He's a giant in the industry.
Giant in the industry. He was like, he was one of my kind of original inspirations, like just full on hardcore tactical, really cool. And I've actually never talked to him.
So. I mean, only barely talked to him, maybe just to set up the pod. So it's going to be a great conversation, I think.
Yeah.
A lot of things I would love to learn about his history and things he's done. So
in my mind, I have this picture of like an adult talking to like two preschoolers with just a huge amount of like questions being fired at him.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm going to try to not do that, but it's going to be hard. Should be fun. All right. Dude, have a great weekend. You guys have a good week.
Awesome.
We'll talk to you soon.
Peace.